It's so lit at Oracle Arena, my TV be shaking when the Warriors go on a run. LOL.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst over at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are back. Christmas is done. Hope you guys had a very, very enjoyable Christmas if you do celebrate Christmas, and of course any other holiday celebrations that you are undertaking at the moment. I hope it was all fantastic for you guys. The Christmas Day games are over, so we're going to recap all five of those from Christmas Day and then look ahead to the eight-game Boxing Day slate, which I know that you guys in America don't call Boxing Day, but we do here, so there it is. It's your Boxing Day slate. So, of course,
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We are going to start with we're not going to start with the monstrous line of the night, because what I want to do is, because we haven't had the podcast for a few days, is talk about some of the teams that wouldn't be covered in this podcast. So talk about the teams that either don't play on Christmas or don't play on Boxing Day. And there are four of those, so we'll talk about those ones first. The first one I want to talk about is the Atlanta Hawks, who we're getting some interesting things in terms of the rotation with the Hawks. Luke Babbitt is out of the rotation at the moment. We had Dennis Schroeder miss a game across the weekend. Then he came back and Marco Bellinelli went back to the bench. But Babbitt is out of favor at the moment, replaced in the rotation by Ersan Ilyasova, who is putting together okay numbers. I wouldn't say that he is a must-own guy. He's more a 14-team league player. And when The Undertaker returns, how they split up those minutes between Ilyasova, Collins, and Deadman, as well as Tyler Cavanaugh in there, is going to be very interesting. So Ersan's more of a streaming type of a player. As for the backup point guard spot, it was Isaiah Taylor for a big stretch of time. But when Schroeder went down, and even after that, Malcolm Delaney seems to be getting a bigger chunk of the minutes, while DeAndre Bembry is losing some playing time there as well. That's obviously just a deeper league sort of a situation, but it is something to pay some attention to, especially if Schroeder does happen to miss more time down the stretch. The New Orleans Pelicans, Rajon Rondo has been absolutely terrible of late. Now, some of it, I guess you could relate to the fact that he did bump knees a few games ago, and that limited him in one of those games. There was another game where Jameer Nelson was getting things rolling. He said to Elvin Gentry, don't put me back in. But regardless, even in games after that, he's still struggling. The team is 9 points per 100 possessions better off when Rondo sits on the bench versus when he is on the court. That is a damning statistic. He has enabled Jrue Holiday to become more aggressive offensively, but overall, the team just stagnates with Rondo out there. Ian Clark's been getting a boost in minutes lately. Now, I'm not saying that you should be dropping Rondo at this point in 12-team leagues or even 10-team leagues. I'm holding him at this point, but this is something I did talk about in the offseason. Rondo's not good, in my opinion, and I've got into many arguments with many people about that. And at some point, his lack of goodness might come back to bite him on the ass and the Pelicans. And, you know, I did think that playing Etuan Moore there or playing Ian Clark at the point guard position might actually be a better option, or playing them next to Jrue Holiday at least. Now, Moore's obviously required at the small forward position, but getting Clark in there has been interesting for this Pelicans team, and it is something for us to monitor as we move forward into the season and see exactly how Rondo's minutes do move. Clark's not an add outside of, you know, 20-team leagues. Rondo's not a drop at this point, but it's a situation that could easily move in that direction, so it is something for us to pay some level of attention to. The Portland Trailblazers, no Dame Lillard, although he will be back for the next game, so any addition of Shabazz Napier, who started one game and came off the bench in the other, didn't matter because he played big minutes in both of those games. It's not really going to be a factor. The Blazers don't play again until Thursday, so I don't think we're going to see much impact there from Napier. We saw Mo Harkless rejoin the rotation at the expense of Al-Farouq Aminu and Evan Turner, who both had their minutes reduced. Now, whether Harkless can stick remains to be seen, but he did have a big game in their last one. He is far from a priority add, but if he's floating around in a 16-teamer, I would add him and see how that goes. Well, Zach Collins is really locking down some rotation minutes. Yeah, clearly getting minutes ahead of Caleb Swanigan, who has been put down to the G League. Myers Leonard, who's out of the rotation. We're running Ed Davis, Yusuf Nurkic, Al-Farouq Aminu, and Zach Collins as the four bigs, and Collins is getting some pretty decent minutes lately. He is going to be, I believe, a real fantasy asset at some point. For now, he's just more of a 16 to 18 team league guy, but for dynasty leagues, he's got that top 70 type potential, a 3-point block rebound scorer type of guy, which is a pretty interesting combination. He's never going to be a top 40 guy, I don't think, but that's not out of the realms of possibility. For now, he's a guy to really look at in dynasty leagues and in your deeper leagues, but he's really establishing himself and he's starting to play some pretty good basketball. So he's a guy to pay a level of attention to. The Charlotte Hornets had a few injuries, but they all came together. Kemba Walker and Dwight Howard both left games over the weekend. Then they returned. They didn't miss any time. So that didn't give us much there. In that game that Dwight left with that finger issue, we saw Marvin Williams play big minutes and thought, okay, well, yeah, if Dwight's going to miss some time, we've got to add Marv. But then he went back to playing piss-poor minutes, and he's not a 12-team league guy to me. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is barely a 12-team. No, he's not. He's not a 12-team league player, in my opinion. But what we're also seeing is Jeremy Lamb getting more minutes than what he was getting earlier on in the season when Nick Batum was around. He's getting, you know, 26 to 27 minutes per night, cutting into Michael Michael Carter-Williams as playing time. And the other thing we saw as well in this game is Trevion Graham playing a ton of minutes there as well. And that really did impact Marv and impacted Kidd-Gilchrist. And Frank the Tank Kaminsky was limited a little bit as well, as was Johnny O'Brien. So some interesting developments with Graham back. He was clearly playing ahead of Malik Monk, who's now been sent down to the G League also. But there's Trevion Graham, Johnny O'Brien situations at deeper leagues. Jez Lamb is a guy for 12-team leagues because the way they're playing him at the moment, there is a definite burst ability with him, I guess, given that the minutes just won't push through to 29 or 30 most nights. He's going to be in the 25 to 27, which is fine, but maintaining top 100-ish type value in those minutes can be a tough ask. But he's been super impressive this season, Jeremy Lamb, as we're all aware, really started to get it together after flashing potential for so many seasons. Now, let's talk about the action from Christmas Day, and let's give out the monstrous line of the night. And it goes to Kevin Durant of the Golden State Warriors. KD had 25, 7, and 3. He hit 3 threes. He had 2 steals and 5 blocks. He was 8 of 19 from the field and 6 of 7 from the free throw line. He is the third-ranked player this season in fantasy, third over the last month. The absence of Steph Curry has helped him up his scoring numbers quite a bit. His efficiency has dipped, though. Over the last 6 games, he's only at 44% from the field and 57 true shooting, which is still very, very much above a league average number. But he's a guy that over the last 4 seasons has shot over 63% true shooting and is at 61% currently this season. But it has been a dip. The return of Curry, when that happens, which will be sometime this week, is definitely going to unlock some more efficiency from Durant. But he has been hampered by not having Curry's gravity, and it just shows how important Steph is as a player. But Durant obviously been fantastic this season. He was the third-ranked player last year. He's a third-ranked player this year. He is just consistency personified. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Andre Robertson of the Oklahoma City Thunder, mainly because his defensive numbers were fantastic. But did a few other things here as well. 8 points, 4 boards, but then he had 5 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks. He was 3 or 4 from the field. He was 2 or 4 from the line, including an air ball there. But it's those defensive numbers, which had been lacking a little bit from Robertson, but he really got it back going in this one. In fact, the previous 2 games, he did not register a single steal or a block, and that's entirely where his value comes from. Prior to his injury, he was putting up multi-numbered, that's not the right word, but more than one in those categories on a fairly regular basis, and it was good to get that back from him. He is far from a must-own guy. He's the 184th ranked player this season, 117th over the last month, because he's averaging 1.5 steals and 1.2 blocks and shooting 58% from the field. So there is some value, but it's really only for certain teams, and we need him to get his minutes back up. He'd been at 24 a game for a bit, played up to 29 in this one, and if he can hover around 29 minutes per game, then he does have value in some standard formats or on some standard teams. But it's really only going to be as a specialist for those defensive numbers and the ability to help your field goals. Now, his free throw percentage is a concern, but he doesn't get to the line. He's only at 0.7 attempts per game at 33%, which is obviously horrendous. But if we're looking at Z scores for that, it's not even a negative one in that category because of how little he gets to the line. The problem is over the last couple of games, the attempt rate has gone up. In his last 4 games, he's been to the line 8 times, shooting 25%, and that's a negative 3 Z score. So that's where you get into real, real deleterious effects punt free throw territory. So be really careful about adding him, because if they go to the hacker Robertson, which they did in this game, that's going to negatively impact your team there. So just pay some attention to that. The young gun of the night goes to Joel Embiid, another one for him, 25 and 16, 3 assists, 2 triples, 3 blocks, 8 of 17 from the field, 7 of 8 from the line. His second game back from the back injury, the first one against the Raptors, he only played 23 minutes, but it was business as usual. He had 35 minutes for Embiid, and that's the big positive sign, is that he was back, second game back, bang, minutes are fine. We got to always hold our breath that nothing happens with his back or his knee or his foot as we move forward. But the fact that he had this back injury, came back, is back to 35 minutes within one game, is an extremely positive sign. It wasn't that they started shooting themselves and went, oh my God, we've got to limit his minutes, 24 minutes for 3 weeks. No, straight back into it at 35 minutes. And what that does, obviously, is it really pisses on the value of Rashawn Holmes and Amir Johnson, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But Embiid is the 11th ranked player so far this season, averaging 24 and 11 in 31 minutes, 2 blocks, 0.8 threes, 49, 81, and 28% from 3. But over the last month, he is up to 35% from 3, just showing you how poor he was to begin the year from deeper. So he's got scope to actually improve those numbers, you know, quite significantly, I think, and get himself into that top 10, which I've spoken about plenty of times for Joel Embiid. The dart of the night. Jaylen Brown, man, he's just racking these up. 8 points, 9 rebounds, no threes, no assists, no steals, no blocks, 3 of 9 from the field and 2 of 5 from the free throw line. At this point, you have to consider him a punt free throw guy. Talk about Z scores for free throws. He's at a negative 2.13 for the season and negative 2.79 over the last 2 weeks, shooting 58% on 3.5 attempts. He was at 69% last season.
Giggity.
Wasn't a great free throw shooter in college. I think he can be better than this, but he's shown no signs of it. In fact, he's actually regressed over the season. His last month, he's gone down to 51%. So he's gotten worse at free throws. And one of the things I talked about, you know, him a lot in his rookie season, or even at the beginning of this season, is his game does not translate very well to fantasy. He can be a good scorer, and that's fine, averaging 14.5 points per game, but no assists, minimal blocks, lowish steals. Yeah, rebounds okay, and then the poor free throw percentage really limits him. He's the 130th ranked player this season, and I wouldn't be dropping him in any 12-team leagues or really any 10-team leagues, because getting that scoring can be valuable, but averaging 14.5 points is different to, say, averaging 17, which is what he was doing earlier. So he's almost like, an Andrew Wiggins-type clone who rebounds the ball more. Yeah, scores a little bit less, rebounds the ball more. That's sort of where he sits at the moment, and that is not an ideal fantasy player. Sure, he can improve, but every translation I saw of Brown gave this same sort of value proposition, and it's sort of where he's sitting now. I don't ever think that he will become a top 40 fantasy guy or a top 50 guy. I think he'll probably have a couple of top 100 seasons, but it's really going to bank on the fact of him improving those free throws, which he has struggled at. But impressively, he has shot 40% from three this season, and that was one of the big surprises from him last season when he shot 34% from three. I thought that was high, but he's taken that up another notch this year. It's just some of those other areas of his game which makes it not the most fantasy-friendly of outlooks for a guy like Jaylen. But another dud of the night, just add that to his collection. Surely, you know, Josh and Barry, who do tally the awards, surely Jaylen Brown is leading the duds of the night at the moment. I would be stunned if there's anyone else that's on top, although the Iron Shoulder guy and Dragic got 3 in about 5 days' time, so maybe he's up there, but Jaylen has to be near the top, unfortunately for him, because again, he seems like an absolute ripper bloke, one of the toppest blokes who ever did top in the NBA. Really seems like a good bloke, just doesn't really cut it for fantasy. We've got 5 games from Christmas we're going to talk about, and then we're going to get into an 8-game preview for DFS after the break. Now we'll get stuck into talking about those 5 games for Christmas, so let's get stuck into that right now. The first game was the Philadelphia 76ers. I wonder how many of you watched every second of every game today. I'll admit, I haven't watched all of the Sixers game. I've watched a little bit of it in between other things. You know, 2 screens going. It started at 4 a.m. here, so I haven't watched the entirety of the fourth quarter. I was watching things on the computer, on the TV at the same time when the other games were going on. But at 4 a.m. start here for that Sixers game, couldn't see all of that live as it happened, but have caught up on most of it. JJ Redick was back. He had 24 and 6 with 4 triples and 2 steals in those 27 minutes, while Embiid we talked about already. And an interesting game from Timothy John McConnell. 29 minutes, so more minutes for him in this one with other players back. 15, 5, and 4 with 2 steals and 2 triples. Now, his numbers hadn't been great recently, and I think I'd place him more in a streamer-type role. and with the return of Markelle Fultz potentially coming, you know, relatively soon, it is going to put a bit of a squeeze on McConnell. But he's a guy to always pay attention to if those minutes arrive. Now, I said I was going to talk earlier about Rashawn Holmes. He was a DNP city in this game. He played 3 minutes in the Sixers' last game. That is a horrible, horrible sign. The fact that Trevor Booker is around, meaning that any minutes he's going to get at power forward have been usurped by Booker. Amir Johnson was the backup here. Now, when Embiid sits and the Sixers do have a back-to-back across the weekend, maybe we can get 25 to 26 minutes out of Holmes. But when everyone's healthy, you've got Saric, you've got Embiid, you've got Johnson, and you've got Booker. And that's four bigs. Now, there is a reasonable argument to be made that he can leap ahead of Johnson or Booker, but he's not at the moment. And if you're holding him just for the games where Embiid misses, I don't think it's worth it unless you have just zero confidence in Embiid staying healthy. And if you did have zero confidence, I don't blame you for that. But I just think holding onto someone in a daily changes type format, waiting for someone to get injured, even though it might be a good bet that they do, when you're going to be getting zeros out of them all the time. Now, there are different situations. If you're in a weekly league and you can put him on the bench, fine. If you're in a league that has a very low games limit played for a week where, you know, you're going to be having to sit active players anyway, it's fine. But when it's a no limit, no weekly changes, daily changes, no game limit situation, you're going to be getting zeros or, you know, 4, 5 minute or 7 minute performances, and it might not be enough. So it really does depend, but he just looks like at the moment he doesn't have that role. As for Booker, he had 3 and 5 in 15 minutes, and Dario Saric 10 and 3. It wasn't the best shooting night for Dario there. Bob Cove also struggled a bit, as did Benny Simmons, who had 8, 8 and 3. On to the Knicks, Enes Kanter, just amazing. 36 minutes for Kanter, 31 and 22. I've said this plenty of times, he is one of the best offensive centers in the NBA, and he is one of the top two rebounding centers in the NBA. I'd say it's him and Andre Drummond are the two best rebounding centers in the NBA, or best rebounders in the NBA, with both of them being, I'd say, far and away better than almost anyone else on the offensive glass. The thing about it with Kanter, and it's something we talked about in the offseason a lot, if he was going to play 30-plus minutes a night, he does have that top 50 potential. We saw him with Russell Westbrook when Kevin Durant was injured a couple of seasons ago, put together a top 30 season. Now, whether he can stay on the court enough defensively, it remains to be seen. But you feel like he's getting at least 25 to 26 minutes every night, and on the 30-minute nights, he's fine. He has to be owned everywhere. Now, there were some people talking about, oh, maybe we should be looking to sell high Enes Kanter after this because they're going to shut him down and start giving minutes to Bill Hernan Gomez. I just don't think that's going to be the case. Now, the Knicks are currently the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. Hernan Gomez isn't that good where you go, you know, where you really have to do everything to get him. He's a worse version of Kanter, in my opinion. He's not a good defender. He's an offensive player who gets rebounds and does it worse. A worse offensive player, worse rebounder than Kanter. Better defender, but he's not a good defender. So we're talking about, you know, getting Kanter out of the rotation to bring the third string center, and maybe that does happen. But maybe it happens in the middle of or the start of April when Fantasy League should be done and dusted. I just don't think that the Knicks, who are currently in the 8th seed, are going to fall that off the pace in the next 2 months that we're going to have Bill come out there and start playing 25 a night and Kanter just be reduced to a 10-minute, 15-minute backup role. I don't think that's going to be the case. But the fact that some people think that means that if you are trying to sell high on him, other people might be thinking that as well. And I just don't think you're going to get a fair return. I would rather just ride it out, unless you get some sort of crazy offer. If someone says, oh, here's Horford, here's Clint Capella, here's DeAndre Jordan in a punt free throw setting, then, you know, then you would, here's Drummond. If someone offers you that, then I go, fine, absolutely, let me take it. But if you have to trade him away for Robin Lopez, if you have to trade him away for even an injured Nick Vucevic, who's going to be out for the next 2 months, I'm not sure that I would do that, because Kanter's got that ability to remain around a top 50, top 60 sort of a talent, and I just don't see the Knicks completely shutting everything down for him. I think the shutdown narrative gets overblown quite a bit. We, aside from the Eric Bledsoe Phoenix fiasco, which has absolutely blown up in their face, and other organizations, I think, will be really have noticed that and be like, We're not going to stop playing healthy players who are clearly superior, because it just creates a shit culture, toxic culture, bad reputation around the league, and then you have them, the Suns, having to trade Eric Bledsoe for what ends up being not very much. And I think that's a significant risk that could be taken, or that these organizations would probably want to avoid if they were competent. The Knicks, who knows? But I'm not looking to just sell on Kanter based on that. Porzingis. 22-7 with 5 blocks. The efficiency has been down, especially from the line in this game. That was poor, but his overall shooting percentages have dropped a bit. But that was still a good game. While Courtney Lee, 20-3, 2 steals, 2 triples. He has to be owned in all leagues. Also, Frankie Ntilikina got more minutes than Jarrett Jack. Didn't play all that well. 4-2-3, but the 27 minutes. But I'm not ready to bank on that yet. Because we've seen it a couple of times so far where he played 27 minutes in a game, yeah, 3-4 games in a row, and then he'd go back and play 19 with Jeff Hornacek. Really not understand that you probably want to get him out there at least equal minutes to Jarrett Jack, if not, you know, a couple of minutes more. Mick Beasley played 23. He had 10-5. They were playing him a little bit at small forward in this game as Doug McDirt played under 20 minutes for the second consecutive game. So that's something to monitor if they get Beasley on the court more. He's not really a 12. He's not actually a 12-team league guy at all at the moment. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. Kevin Love, 36 minutes for Lovey, 31-18, 6 triples and 2 steals. We know he's good. We know he's good for fantasy. We know he's good in real life, but Ty Lue does have a frustrating habit of not playing him enough. Now, I can't say he didn't play him enough here. Played 36 minutes, but you just have that fear that he is going to go back and play limited minutes once we get back. That's not a Christmas game when Isaiah Thomas returns. I think it's going to have an impact there, especially as I can see, yeah, but when Isaiah Thomas is back and healthy, I reckon we might go back to starting Tristan Thompson, pushing Jay Crowder to the bench, and then Crowder and Love almost splitting time at power forward. I can see that as a legitimate possibility, given the fact that, you know, you've got Love at center in there to get more shooting in. But when Thomas joins the starting lineup, you're going to have more offense, more shooting there, and maybe we have Love getting reduced. So that is a legitimate concern to me. Jay Crowder had a strong game, 15-6 in 29 minutes, hit 3 threes, shot the ball well, not overreacting to that, not getting too excited, but it was something interesting to watch. Dwayne O'Wade was really good as well, 13-5-4 with 3 steals in 29 minutes. He's more of a streamer than a must own guy. LeBron
James,
26-6 with 2 threes. Didn't shoot the ball well. In fact, the whole Cavs team shot 32% from the field, which is obviously horrendous. They shot 42 from 3, which is good, but yeah, not a good game from LeBron there. While not much else to really talk about with the Cavs. On to the Warriors. Draymond, 12-12-11, just really racking it up as a triple-double. And you remember me talking about Jordan Bell lots in the offseason at the start of the season, and I said, I reckon at some point this year he's going to start over Zaza Pachulia, and my prediction was it'll happen by Christmas. Well, Christmas Day, Zaza Pachulia is healthy, and Jordan Bell starts over him, while Zaza Pachulia is a DNP CD. Given it's Christmas, Steve Kerr, every fantasy owner just, they want one thing, mate. They just want one thing, and that is this. Yes, Steve, it's Christmas time. Don't let the bell end. And for those of you unaware what that is the greatest Christmas carol of all time. It's the darkness, Christmas time, open parentheses, don't let the bells end. And that's what we want. But Zaza's going to start the next game against Utah. But Jordan Bell has absolutely got a position locked in the rotation. Now, he only needs 20 minutes a game to be a top 100 fantasy guy. I'm not sure he gets 20 minutes a game, but I think he'll get 18 or so. Kevon Looney should be, any Kevon Looney minutes and JaVale McGee minutes should be going to Bell. You should be playing Zaza, you should be playing Jordy Bell, and you should be playing Dave West at those minutes at center. And that's what I hope Kerr does, but there is still a risk that he goes back and plays 14 minutes here. But for now, I would own Bell in all leagues. Maybe not tens, but in all leagues, I would own him just to see what happens. Again, he won't start every game after this. Zaza will start the next game, but I get more of the feeling that Kerr might do it matchup based, and we might get Bell starting a few more games with a healthy Zaza. As I said, Zaza was a DNP CD in this game. Pat McCaw started, 9 points in 24 minutes, but Steph could be back for the next game, while Sean Livingston was being eased back from his knee soreness and played only 14 minutes. Clay had 24-7 with 4 triples. The next game we'll talk about is the Washington Wizards and the Boston Celtics. Big win from the Wizards. really like a playoff rotation pretty much from the Wizards. 40 minutes for Brad Beal, 39 minutes for Johnny Wall, 36 for Otto Porter. We had Kelly Oubre playing 32, and therefore the bench guys didn't see much action. 9 minutes for Tomas Satoransky, 8 for Jody Meeks, and only 6 for Yan Mahinmi, allowing Marcin Gortat to play 27. Now, Gortat had 11 and 10 with a steal and 2 blocks, and they're nice numbers. I just don't put any faith in him being able to play those minutes on a consistent basis. If you add him, he will be your worst player on your roster in nearly all circumstances. So to me, that position is better used for streaming. Markeith had a better game as well, 14 and 7 in 29, and I don't believe that he is a must-own guy. This is great news also for John Wall owners. We saw him have that weird minutes restriction in the other game. He played 39 and had 21, 5 and 14, so that's a level of relief if you do own Johnny Wall. On to the Celtics. Jaylen Brown, I talked about him being the dud of the night. Very, very late in the game, he did have an ankle injury, and we don't know if he's going to play on Wednesday. It seems unlikely at this point, but we will get more information on Tuesday about Brown's absence. If Brown is out, you're going to have more ability to use a guy like Terry Rozier, while Marcus Smart will move into the starting lineup. Marcus Morris played in this game, but he's also said he is unlikely to play on Wednesday and is probably going to have another PRP injection in his knee. He should not be anywhere near 12-team leagues and probably 14-team leagues. The other thing we need to pay attention to is how well Vanilla Tice is playing. Daniel Tice, 18 minutes, 12 and 4, a block and a three. He is outplaying Aaron Baines, and I think you can make a legitimate argument, and I think he probably should start at this point, and he should start over Marcus Morris when he's back. Start next to Al Horford. He can defend, he can switch, he can protect the rim, he can shoot a little bit, although his threes have been disappointing this season. He's a guy to look at in, say, 16-teamers, maybe 14-teamers, but probably 16-teamers, and just see how it goes. Because if he can establish a 24-minute role, which is a long way away, but if he can establish that, then there's going to be even back-end streaming 12-team league value. Horford was strong, 12-7 and 6 with a pair of blocks. Rozier also had a good game, 26 minutes, 16 and 7 with 4 triples, while Kyrie and Tatum both dropped in 20 points. Shout out to Jason Tatum, also going 2 of 2 from 3. He did dip under 50% from 3 across the weekend. I haven't checked where he's at today, so I might have a quick look just to see how the beard's looking, whether I'm going to be keeping the beard if he continues to shoot over 50%. Oh, he is bang on 50%. Let's see if we're exactly there. 112 attempts, 56 3. So he is bang on 50% from 3. So let's just hope he misses a couple more and keeps those numbers down so this beard can stay on. The next game we'll look at, the Houston Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. No Chris Paul, but Clint Capella returned. He had 19 and 10 with 2 steals in 30 minutes. He's good. Good to see him playing those 30 minutes as well. Jimmy Harden, 29, 8 and 14 in 39 minutes. Or Eric Gordon, another strong game, starting in place of Chris Paul. 37 minutes with 20 points and 3 rebounds. Now, the return of Chris Paul will impact Gordon a bit, but it's more going to be the further return of Luke Marmute in a couple of weeks, which is going to push Gordon potentially down into that drop zone. So he's a guy you own for now, and Chris Paul coming back won't change that, but the return of Marmute may push him down to, say, instead of 33 minutes a night, 29 minutes a night, and then he becomes more of a streaming-type target. Ariza had 20 points. Ryan Anderson had 11 and 5 with 2 triples in his 30 minutes, and he is just a streaming option. Good to see Bronte Weber playing. He is one of those guys you can stream for steals. He had 2 steals in 18 minutes, but of course when those players come back, Paul and Marmute, then we're just not going to see Weber playing at all. On to the Thunder. Westbrook, 36, 6 and 11 with 3 steals. Good percentages as well. A strong game from Westbrook. Also, Melo shot the ball well. He was 8 of 12 for 20 points with 5 rebounds. Not much else there for Melo, but that's good to see him not shooting a piss poor percentage, while Paulie George had 24, 5 and 4 with 4 triples on 53% shooting. So all 3 of Westbrook, George and Melo shot at least 50% from the field. Steve-O Adams had 15 and 10 with 3 blocks as well. And aside from Robertson, who we highlighted earlier, just not much happening on this team, and that's pretty much a standard thing. Only 3 minutes for Alex Abrines. He seems to have been forced out of the rotation, so Josh Huestis can get more playing time, which is not something I necessarily agree with. But Abrines showed some really nice things when Paul George was out and Robertson was out earlier on in the month, but that's definitely faded away at this point. The last game of the night, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm not going to harp on about how bad the announcing was with Shaq and Barkley and Kenny Smith, but it was horrible. They just say things that are just flat out wrong, and it's absolutely 100% infuriating. And you can talk about them, but they're entertaining. There's no rule to say that to be entertaining, you have to be incorrect all the time. You can be correct and entertaining at the same time. It's possible. But yeah, you have to actually pay more than 5 seconds of attention to your job and do some level of preparation and use something to back up any argument that you have, like the argument that Brandon Ingram's a better jump shooter than Kyle Kuzma. Just the amount of bullshit that was being spouted in that broadcast was infuriating. Townsy had 21 and 10. He had 4 blocks. Strong game from him, while Jim Butler had 23, 5 and 8 with 2 steals. Really good numbers from both of those guys, while Taj with the big, big game, 23 and 9 in 34 minutes on 85% shooting. Clearly, those numbers won't be able to sustain. Hit a nice killer 3 late as well to help secure the victory. There was the return, finally, of Nemanja Bjelica, who's been out for about a month, day-to-day, every day, it appeared like, but he was back. He only played 6 minutes, had to get his conditioning up. That will come back up, and he'll push into the 15-17 minute role, and that's going to impact Gibson by a couple of minutes. It's going to impact Gorgui Dieng, and it's probably going to eliminate the 5 or 6 minutes that Marcus Georges Hunt was getting and push him out of the rotation and maybe lose a couple off Jamal Crawford, who was red hot and had 19 points on 10 shot attempts. Jeff Teague. I thought Tyus Jones played better than Jeff Teague in this one, but Teague gets the 33 minutes. 6, 7, and 10 for Teague with 2 steals. Only took 6 shots, so he was efficient with the shooting, and that's more of a role that I think he should be playing. And he seems to have played that more regularly since he returned from his injury. So you know, he's still providing those other numbers. Just the scoring won't be there as it was before, which is something that the Timberwolves do need. We go 16, 4, and 5 for him. The efficiency wasn't there, but good to see him getting 5 assists, hitting 2, 3. So that's something that can help rehabilitate his fantasy value. He's not a guy that I would drop, but I can totally understand if you're in a 10-team league why you would. On to the Lakers. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, played 41 minutes. He had 31 points with 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, a block, and hit 6 triples. Got to the line 13 times and wasn't actually good there. Only 9 of 13, and he's not a good free throw shooter, which makes me think that some of his other numbers are going to dip, but his offensive game is fantastic. Defensively, he does struggle quite a bit, but he brought some defensive stats here. He's been putting up fantastic numbers, and clearly he is a must-own guy, as is Julius Randle, despite the absolutely infuriating way that he is used by Luke Walton. Only 19 minutes here. He had 16 and 7 on 70% shooting. It's just completely infuriating the way that he gets used, while Larry Nance had 9 and 5 in 21 minutes, and I don't think that Nance is a 12-team league guy. My boy Joshie Hart, the hitman, 12 and 6 in 39 minutes for Hart, 2 threes, a steal, starting in place of Brandon Ingram. Lots of questions about Hart across the weekend. What do we do with him? I like him, but when Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's not in jail and when Ingram's playing, the minutes just aren't going to be enough there for him. Yeah, he might be able to get 20 minutes or so, but that's not going to be enough to really get close to 12-team league value. You know, if Ingram suffers a long-term injury or if KCP gets locked up again or suffers an injury or whatever that causes him to be absent from the lineup, then Hart would be a guy that I would add. If he's getting 30-plus a night, he's a guy to add. But for now, yeah, not necessarily. The thing we do have to watch, though, is with Lonzo Ball out for the next week, Jordan Clarkson started at point guard in this game. And if he starts at point guard at the next one, then there are going to be some minutes backing up the two, opening up for Clarko. But he'd only played 40% of his minutes at shooting guard this season. He'd primarily been the backup point guard this season, Clarkson. But if he doesn't play any of his minutes at shooting guard and plays all of them at point guard, then it is going to open up some playing time for Joshie Hart. So that will give him maybe 14-team league value and some streaming 12s. But when Lonzo's back, when Ingram's back, then he's going to go back to playing a solid 15-16-minute bench role, and that's not going to be enough for most people. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope did what he usually does, and that is not shoot well. He does that so often. He's as streaky as they come, 27% shooting for 8 points in 36 minutes, while Bogut started for who knows why. While Tyler Ennis played 15 minutes and Alex Caruso played 10 in Lonzo's absence. That does it for all the Christmas action. I'm going to take a quick break here and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about all the games for Tuesday, for Boxing Day. There are 8 of them in the NBA. So we'll do that and then we will play a song by Semeron and it's called Crusher. And then I'll be back to talk some DFS.
What's that?
All right, guys, we are back, and we're going to be talking DFS now for Tuesday. But first, let's talk about the perfect lineups from Christmas. On FanDuel, Johnny Wall, 50. Russ Westbrook, 58.7. Andre Robertson, 37.3. And Jordy Clarkson, 44.7. Courtney Lee had 31.6. Kelly Oubre, 26. Draymond had 47.9. And the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, had 44.6. Enes Kanter rounded it out with 56.9, and that was 397.7 points and cost $59,800 on DraftKings. And you can see the massive discrepancy on value between FanDuel and DraftKings, which is something I highlighted on Twitter the other day. Jim Harden, 68.5. JJ Redick, 39.5. Andre Robertson, 32. Kanter, 60.5. The Polish Hammer at 34. Jordan Clarkson, 42. Kevin Love, 60. And Draymond at 53, and that cost $389.5. And that cost you $49,900. So you're almost of the same score between DraftKings and FanDuel, and you have one extra player on FanDuel, which is just the extra value that's afforded to you on DraftKings with the pricing enables you to get those higher scores. And FanDuel continues to be a lot tighter. When at the start of the season, their pricing was significantly looser than DraftKings, and they've tightened up and gone the other way. Now, in today's show, a little bit of a change-up. Normally, I go through and highlight everything from a FanDuel perspective, but there's been some issue with the FanDuel pricing over on Basketball Monster. Some of the pricing, I can't access it because I'm access denied on FanDuel due to my location. I can't actually see it, so I have to wait for Ken to get up and sort it out. But there appears to be some other sort of contest happening on FanDuel, where the pricing is just absolutely through the roof. Giannis is 16,000 and Kyle Lowry is at 14,000 and just crazy, crazy prices. So what we're going to do in today's show is give it out to the DraftKings people and go through the slate from a DraftKings perspective. And the reason I mainly do FanDuel is the main thing, and people often ask me, I do more DraftKings. The reason I do it is it uses standard scoring. So it can be applied to points leagues in seasonal stuff. It can be applied to Yahoo. It can be applied to Moneyball here in Australia. It's the standard scoring, NBA fantasy stuff. It's the standard scoring. So that's why I talk about it. Also, I've done about 3 or 4 polls over this on my Twitter account, which site do you prefer? And it's always FanDuel that comes out on top of DraftKings. So that's why I do it. But today, because of this pricing issue that's coming up, we are going to go through it from a DraftKings perspective. The first game we're going to look at is the Indiana Pacers and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 2, and the total is 208.5 points. Let's have a look at this from a point guard point of view. Reggie Jackson is at 5,500. He's been putting up some okay-ish numbers, nothing spectacular. If I would use him, it would only be as a tournament. The Pacers have been a marginal negative against point guard, so he's not in a great spot, and I just don't fully trust his playing time at the moment, whereas Ish Smith at 3,800. Ish is averaging 21 points over his last three, which at 3,800 is not a bad return on investment, but I don't have much faith in his floor, and I don't have much faith in a high ceiling. So both those point guards, probably not guys I'm going to take a look at. Daz Collison at 5,600 had seen his minutes dip for 3 consecutive games, but then he went back and played 38 in the last one, and he put up 30 points. Not really feeling much for him, and Corey Joseph's just one of those guys that just doesn't do enough. The shooting guard based players. Now, of course, DraftKings has the dual position eligibility, so some of these guys are going to be eligible at multiple positions. Bojan Bogdanovic is just 4,200. I think that's a really, really good cash play. He's averaging 25 over his last three, which at 4,200 is a really good return. And remember that the pricing is much looser on DraftKings, so we're probably looking at 5.3 to 5.5x as decent type numbers. And Bogdanovic can get to that pretty comfortably at 4,200. I wouldn't be relying upon him for cash because he's a little bit up and down in what he does, but he does have some tournament value here. Reggie Bullock has been the starter. He's had a couple of good games and one poor one, but at 3,800, coming off a 26-pointer in the last one, he has absolutely got that GPP upside, and a 30-point upside there for Bullock. The downside is not good for him. He had a 5-point game in one of those starts, but I don't hate using him in cash if he is indeed announced as the starter again, which I imagine he will be. Lance Stevenson's at 4,300. I don't really like a huge amount there, while you got Lukey Kennard, Stan Johnson, Langston Galloway as other shooting guards. Toby Harris at 6,100 had a nice rebound against the Knicks. He generally does well against the Knicks, but he's at 6,100 here. 29-point average over the last three times he's played against the Pacers, which is not bad at 6,100, but I don't feel super confident in Toby. So probably someone I won't be looking too closely at. Then you got a whole bunch of guys who are like small forward, power forward, eligible. Tone Tolliver's at 3,900. I imagine that he is going to start. He's played the last two games as the starting power forward for the Pistons. He's played 30 minutes, and he's gotten you 20 points in both of those games. And at 3,900, I'm okay with that for cash. I don't know how high his upside is, but I feel pretty good that he's going to go out there and knock down 2 to 3 triples. And you're about to have 12 to 15 points and then get you 20 fantasy points that way. So that's a decent cash look there for Tone Tolliver. And you've got Thaddeus Young at 5,800, whose production has been well down lately. I don't feel all that good about using him. Domantas Sabonis at 5,400. The numbers for him have been pretty good lately, but it's been a Miles Turner struggle, then a Thaddeus Young struggle. So the consistency is not there for me, or my ability to feel consistent with him is not there. So he's not someone I'm overly interested in. And then the centers, I like both of these guys here. Miles Turner, especially at 6,700. That is a very, very good price against Andre Drummond. He hasn't done all that well against Drummo, but at that sort of a salary, I'm in on using Miles Turner. His last couple of games have been real strong, whereas on the other side, Drummo's at 9,300. Now, I love what Drummond can do. He has annihilated Turner the last three times, a 47-point average. That salary is pretty high, and it does make me at least take a second look at it for cash, but for tournaments, I think he's got near 60-point upside here. And I think his floor is probably around 40, maybe 38, which is not a bad floor at that $9,300 price tag. Vic Oladipo, someone I didn't touch on, which I should have, he's at 9,400. Yeah, we love what he's been doing, averaging 47 over the last five. It just feels that it's still a little bit too highly priced. I would consider him in a tournament, but I don't feel strongly about using him in any cash game. All right, let's move on to the next game. It is the Toronto Raptors and the Dallas Mavericks. The Raptors are favored by 5.5. We don't know the status of Bebe Nogueira or CJ Miles. Bebe's missed about the last 3 or 4 weeks with that calf strain, while Miles has missed the last two games due to a dental procedure. If Miles is out, it's more minutes for D'Lon, it's more minutes perhaps for Norm Powell, and more minutes for the Jedi, OG Anunoby. Actually, people wanted to know my Star Wars take, weirdly enough. The Last Jedi, went and saw it on the weekend. I liked it. I know that plenty of people hated it, and someone had this response to me on Twitter, ruined the entire extended universe. And that's fine, but I knew that was going to be the case. And Disney, Lucasfilm came out, and when they announced this new trilogy, they said that everything that's in the expanded universe, or extended universe from now on, is not canon. So everything you may have read in those stories doesn't exist anymore, and we're establishing a new extended universe that will be canon with everything. So I understand that, and I know people get really upset about it, especially the hardcore Star Wars fans. I liked it. I thought visually it was absolutely stunning. That battle scene with the salt was amazing towards the end. Really stunning visuals, fantastic cinematography, no problem with the story. Ben loved it. Liked it. Really looking forward to seeing it again, actually. So that's my Star Wars take. I'm not overly critical of films, though. I don't really get into the minutia of things all that much, but this was really good. It was enjoyable. Didn't have any issues with it. Enjoyed it. So there you go. Two thumbs up from me for my Star Wars review. Speaking of OG Anunoby, of course. At point guard in this one, we've got JJ Barea at 4,600. He is just crushing it at the moment. He had 43 in the last game, 29 minutes. Now, I think that's probably an unrealistic expectation, but he's just racking up assists every game, gets you 23 to 24 minutes, puts up some numbers, and is absolutely worth looking at here, I think, even for cash and with some tournament upside. You've got Dennis Smith, who's down to 4,800. Now, I love that for a tournament. Look, he hasn't been putting up great numbers, but he has had a 30-point game in his last five. And if things get rolling for Smith at 4,800, there is value there, but I wouldn't want to use it for cash. I'm not interested in Devin Harris. Kyle Lowry at 8,200. Well, he has done very, very well against Dallas in the past. He's in a little bit of a slump in real life in terms of his fantasy production, 33 points over the last three games, but his last three against Dallas, 52 points over the last couple of seasons. So I'm in on Lowry here. I don't think that Smith or Barea or Devin Harris or Yogi Ferrell are really going to be able to do too much to slow him down. I guess the fear you have is that there's a blowout involved, that it could limit his production. The other guy we want to look at is D'Lon Wright, who's getting a ton of minutes. If CJ Miles is out, D'Lon's at 3,800, and I really like that for cash if CJ's out, because I think it almost locks D'Lon in at a 22 to 23 minute role. His ability to get assists and get steals should get him those numbers fairly comfortably there. Yogi Ferrell's at 45. He's got a bit of upside, sure, but I don't think he hits it often enough, and his floor is too low for me to really get too much behind that. At shooting guard, you got Wes Matthews, 4,400. I cannot consider Wes Matthews an option really ever. Whereas DeMar DeRozan's at 8,800. DeMar feels like a relatively safe guy if he was at 8,100. But at 8,800, I feel like, given how much value there is in other spots on DraftKings, I just feel like it's a little bit too high. $500-$600 too high for DeMar DeRozan. Small forward guys, the pencil Harrison Barnes, 6,200. No upside, but a pretty solid floor, so I think that is a decent enough cash play. The Jedi's at 3,700. OG Anunoby, I'm not really feeling too much there, especially with the return of Wright that has limited what Anunoby has been able to do. At power forward, Dwighty Powell had a big game in the last one. 23 points, $3,100 price tag. Do I feel I can rely upon Dwight Powell? Of course I don't, so I won't be using him. Dirk Nowitzki, 4,500. Some big games from Dirk recently, and I actually feel pretty good about labeling him as a cash guy here. 4,500, 35 in his last game, 26 average over the last five. I'm not sure the tournament upside is massive, but I feel like the consistency for Dirk should be enough to get him a cash game spot. Serge Ibaka at 5,800. I love what Serge has been doing, but that might be just a little bit too high to be totally all in on him in this spot. Siakam, Maxi Kleber. Kleber's minutes have been well down over the last two as well. At center, Jonas Valanciunas, 4,900. Give him 30 minutes, he smashes it. The likelihood of that happening is pretty much zero. So that is a no from me, while Salah Mejri is a minimum salary guy for a very specific reason. The next game is the Orlando Magic and the Miami Heat. Just tons of injuries here for the Heat. One good thing, though, is Hassan Whiteside has been upgraded to questionable with that bone bruise. We know that Deion Waiters is out. We know that Justice Winslow is out. We know that Jimmy Johnson is out. And Goran Dragic, the iron shoulder. I was going to say ironically, but it's not irony. He is dealing with an elbow, and he is probable. So the big question there is Whiteside. If Whiteside is out, then we get big boost for Olynyk because Jim Johnson is out. Big boost for Jordy Mickey and Bam Adebayo. If he is in, it limits the reliability of Bam. It limits the reliability of Olynyk, although Olynyk should still get plenty of power forward minutes. And it reduces what Jordan Mickey can do. So there is some significant changes that can happen if Whiteside happens to play. At point guard, Dragic is at 6,600. Has not been anywhere near that sort of level recently. So I'm not feeling overly good about him, except point guards against the Magic have been a real winner. So, if you're a multi-lineup tournament guy, with everyone out, if the Iron Shoulder's playing, he does have 45 to 50 point upside here, matchup-based, usage-based, opportunity-based. So he's someone to consider there, but I don't feel good about him as any sort of cash play. Tyler Johnson's at 5,700. Given that Waiters is out, we're going to see more Johnson playing shooting guard. And he had 29 in that last game with Deion out. So I think that he is fine as a cash play and does have a decent level of tournament value. While Lord Alfred Payton, with no Vucevic, I didn't even talk about the Magic injuries, sorry. As Gordon, Evan Fournier, John Isaac are all questionable, while Vuce is out for the next 6 to 8 weeks. So Lord Alfred Payton, if we've got no Evan Fournier, if we've got no Isaac, if we've got no Gordon, then Payton's going to have to step it up. He had 61 points in that last game with no Gordon, no Fournier, no Isaac, and then Vuce getting hurt earlier. He's at 6,600. He's averaging 43 over his last three. I got no problem with getting him in. Yes, it is a negative matchup against the Heat, but given the increased opportunity he should be looking at, I think it's a really good spot to consider him. DJ Augustine, Derek Walton, nothing there. At shooting guard, the Duke, Wayne Ellington, 6,000. No, he's not 6,000. He's 3,900. He had 20 points in that last game. He's going to play 30-plus minutes. I think that he is almost a lock for 20 DraftKings points with really 35, 38-point upside. Cash, tournaments, like him. And then we've got John Simmons at 7,100. He is going to take a ton of shots, which, given the way that DFS scores, can actually be quite beneficial. Now, his numbers haven't been awesome lately, averaging just 24 over the last three, but I think that you should have, especially if Gordon and Fournier are out, I would be in on him. If they play, it is really tough to consider John Simmons an option here. Joshie Richardson at 6,800. If we have those guys from Orlando playing, I'd be much more in on Josh Richardson at that sort of a price tag. 6,800, no Waiters, no Winslow, and more opportunity for Richardson to be potentially the best player on this team, which I know might seem outrageous to a lot of you. Evan Fournier is at 5,900. Yeah, he was playing very well before the injury, but I don't think we can trust him to return and put up those numbers from the get-go. Well, if Gordon is out, Mario Hezonja is listed as a shooting guard. He's at $5,000. If there's no Gordon and no Isaac, I'm in on Hezonja. That is a cash lock to me. Small forward Isaac's at 3,300. Just don't think that if he does play and if Gordon's out, he's going to get enough run, given how long he has missed with that ankle problem, which makes it a little bit tougher to use him. Whereas Gordon's at 7,700, the similar sort of issue with the calf. If he plays, just don't think he's going to play enough. At power forward or centre, Bismack Biyombo, who is going to start, and he is a horrendous, horrendous fantasy player. Over his last five games, he is averaging 20 points per 36 minutes. He's not going to play 36 minutes, and he would need 20 points to be a decent option. Now, I think he can be a little bit better in a starting role, so I don't think it's a bad, bad cash play to use him, but his recent form has been poor, and his upside is absolutely non-existent. Khalil Linick at 6,100. If Whiteside's out, I think that's worth a look. Otherwise, probably not. And Bam Adebayo, same thing, down at 4,100. If there's no Whiteside, I am in on Bam even for cash. If Whiteside plays, that's a tough ask. The other guy you can have a look at, and this guy's terrible, but Adrian Payne at 3,600. No Vooch, potentially no Gordo, potentially no Isaac. He was the backup five when Vucevic went down with Biyombo starting. If Biyombo's terrible, which he is, maybe Payne could come in and drop a 25 or 26. Maybe. It's a long bow. But potentially, that's the sort of move that you might need to make in a GPP because the opportunity could potentially be there. Mo Spates has really been bad this year. He has somehow averaged less points per 36 than Bismack Biyombo at 16.4 per 36 over his last five, which is horrendous. But like Payne, if he gets 25 minutes and starts jacking shots at a 40% usage rate, then he does have that opportunity to burst through that. But of course, that's going to be a multi-lineup tournament sort of guy only. Jordy Mickey's at 42, and only if Whiteside's out would I consider him. As for pure centres, Whiteside is at 7,100. I wouldn't want to use him in his first game back. I just don't think that there's going to be enough minutes there for Hassan. Not that there's not enough there for him, but he's just not going to get enough due to the injury recovery. The Chicago Bulls and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are favoured by 6.5. Report out today, apparently the Bucks are looking to trade for JaVale McGee. I don't know why, but apparently they are. The Bucks are favoured by 6.5, and the total is 211 points. We saw Tone Snell reinserted into the starting lineup in the last game. I'm sure he will stick there. Brogdon still played 30 minutes. Snell played 34. Jason Terry, despite it being December, didn't play, and we still get that weird backup shooting guard rotation, Dellavedova. You get Sterling Brown. You've got DeAndre Liggins in there as well, and Terry and Sean Kilpatrick also in the mix. We had Giannis Antetokounmpo miss the last game. He's probable for this one with that right knee. There is a real worry to me with Giannis, given how many minutes he's been playing. The injury's already flared up and caused him to miss two games this season. It is a concern as a Bucks fan. But for now, we should be consider him ready to go. At point guard, Brogdon is at 4,800. The minutes have been decently consistent lately, averaging 32 over the last five, and some of that is with Snell and Dellavedova back. But the production hasn't been fantastic, and I don't really love this. Despite the good matchup, I would only look tournaments, but even then, not loving it. Chrissy Dunn at 7,000. The Bucks have been tough against point guards. Dunn had a real stinker in the last one, but I think he's got bounce back ability, but I don't trust it for cash here. While Eric Bledsoe's at 7,500, and that price rise of 11,100 over the last game makes it a little bit tough to swallow. But as I said earlier, point guards against the Bulls have been able to put up pretty significant numbers this season. So a 40-point game out of Bledsoe shouldn't be considered an anomaly. But I also don't think at that price he's going to be really a great option. Jaren Grant, Daly, not really worth looking at. At shooting guard, Justin Holliday's at 52, only for GPPs. He's too inconsistent. While Chris Middleton's up to 8,400. He's been playing fantastically, but he had 48, and that was without Giannis. When Giannis returns, I don't think you can honestly spend 8,400 on Middleton. David Nwaba's at 4,000, no thanks. Tone Snell, 38, no thanks. Liggins and Zips are, of course, no way. At small forward, Yanni's at 11,500. I love the matchup for Antetokounmpo here. He's averaged 56 against the Bulls in the last three outings. I feel pretty good about using him for cash. I feel pretty good about Jason Kidd taking no heed of sports science whatsoever. So I think that we're going to have a 50-plus one from Yanni. I think it's a strong bet to have a go at. And power forwards, Lauri Markkanen, 5,400. Yeah, decent games from him lately, but really not blowing it up with high ceiling. And the floor's a little bit questionable. The 5,400's all right, but with Nikola Mirotic around, with Punchbob Shiploke in there as well, it's a little bit tough to rely upon Lowry at this point. As for Miro, 6,500 for Mirotic. Too expensive. Like what he's been doing, but the minutes have been down since Markkanen's been back. He hasn't been shooting at 59%, which we knew he wouldn't, and that's impacting his ability to reach that level of value. Bob Portis is at 46. Yeah, some okay games from him. Strictly a tournament-only guy. I don't really feel good about that. Well, McCurr, no interest there. Robin Lopez is at 4,500, and the Muppet John Henson's at 47. I would much rather take Henson over Lopez. Got more upside, but neither of them are a super strong option or super reliable option for cash anyway. Let's have a look at the next one. We're going to take a squiz at the Brooklyn Nets and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 11 and the total is 208. Kawhi is probable and Dan Green is probable. Both of those guys missed the last game, so that's going to have an impact on rotations. At point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie is down to 6,300. Now, it's a really, really tough matchup against the Spurs, but at 6,300, I really like Dinwiddie here. He's averaged 33 across his last three. Had a couple of down games in there, but I do like his ability in this one here. Pat Mills and Tone Parker, I don't really think they should be touching any DFS lineups, while Kyle Anderson is the weird point guard slash small forward designation on DraftKings. He's at 4,600. No to him with Kawhi back, and Sauce Castillo's at 3,400. That's also a no, as is Bryn Forbes and DeJounte Murray. Now, Forbes is 3,500, and he had been starting with Dan Green out, but Green's probable, so Forbes just isn't going to get it done. In fact, he didn't get it done even when he was starting. At shooting guard, the Blue Swimmer, Alan Crabb, 4,200, you know the drill. Don't use him in cash. Consider him a tournament guy, but he has been significantly underwhelming. His biggest game in his last five has been only 24 points, so that sort of takes the idea away from him being this great high upside tournament guy. Caris LeVert's at 5,100. I don't really feel too excited there, especially with this sort of matchup. You've got Jumpin' Joe Harris, Manu Ginobili, Dan Green. I don't like any of them. At small forward, I do like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who unexplainably is down to 5,900. This is coming off a stretch of the last three games where he's averaging 38 points. I get that it's the Spurs, but 5,900 for Rondae, in. I'm totally in on that. He's playing fantastically. His usage is up. He's rebounding well. He's playing lots of minutes. I'm totally in on him at 5,900. That could very easily bite me in the ass, but I am in. Kawhi's at 6,100. But again, we don't know how the minutes are going to be, so that's a fade. Well, Damari Carroll down to $5,000. Yeah, actually, he's up from 48 the last game, but his game has been bouncing back pretty nicely. 28-point average over the last five, 36 over the last three. Feel pretty good about him and Hollis Jefferson from the net side of things. Both of those at pretty decent options. Rudy Gay at 5,200. Well, he's like a third stringer now, so no interest there. At power forward, Jarrett Allen, 34. No, LaMarcus Aldridge, 85. That's a $900 increase from LaMarcus based on a 46-pointer with Kawhi out in the last one. No interest with Kawhi back. That's just too volatile. While Pau Gasol at 6,400. Pau is averaging 44 points over his last three. Had a triple-double in his last game. And it is a very good matchup for big men against the Nets. I guess that's an argument you can make for using Aldridge, but I wouldn't want him in cash. And Pau, a similar story. But both of those guys you could throw into a tournament lineup. I don't think we're going to see Jahlil Okafor, so Quincy Acey at 3,300 is going to get minutes, but I don't really care. And at center, Tyler Zeller, 3,500. Zeller at 3,500, I feel like he's going to get 18 or 19 points, which is not a bad cash play. It's also very low upside with a floor that could drop out at any point. So not really going to do it for me there. Sorry, Tyler. Let's move on to the next one. It's the Memphis Grizzlies and the Phoenix Suns, the rematch. The Grizz are favored by one, and the total is 204.5 points. Devin Booker is probable to return. I don't think he's going to be playing his full minutes right out of the gate. He won't be getting his 35, more like a 28, 29 sort of mark. So bear that in mind. For Memphis, Jermichael Green has already been ruled out. Chandler Parsons started the last game with Green out, so I would expect a similar thing, and Parsons played 26 minutes in that one. So pay attention there. You're going to get some extra minutes for Jarrell Martin and Jim Ennis in that case also. At point guard, Andy Harrison, 4,100. Got his minutes back up with Jermichael out because everyone was pushed down a position. 4,100 for Andy, 29 points. He's shown an ability to put up numbers. It's just is very inconsistent. So he could be a low-owned GPP guy who could turn 6, maybe 7x value. Maybe. Tyler Ulis at 3,600, absolutely nothing to do with that. Tyreek Evans, 8,600, crushing it. 65 points in the last one for Tyreek, but I just feel like that's too high. That is a $700 price rise from that last game for Tyreek. And while it might be interesting in a GPP, I just have, it's the price is just getting too high for Tyreek. It is an opportunity for him here in this one, of course, with Mike Conley still out. So yeah, pay attention, see how the pricing looks on other sites, but I just feel like he's getting too highly priced. Isaiah Cannon up to 4,700. He's been putting up some okay numbers. I don't believe in his shooting, so I would consider him a GPP guy who does have that 35-point upside, maybe 40-point upside. But still, despite him playing as well as he has, he's still not getting 35 a night. He played 30 in the last game. He's got a 26 average over the last three in terms of minutes, which is fine, but I'd much prefer him at a 4,000 rather than a 4,700. Jim Ennis at 32. He played 28 minutes in the last game, 18 points. There is some tournament upside for Ennis here with Jermichael Green ruled out, so maybe consider him. Well, Joshy Jackson at 41. He's going to go back to the bench with Devin Booker returning, so not much to see. Same with Troy Daniels, who loses playing time. An interesting guy to take a look at is Kobe Simmons, who took all of Mario Chalmers' backup point guard minutes in the last game. He's listed as a shooting guard here. Played 25 minutes and had 17 points. And at minimum salary, Maybe in a tournament. I don't feel super strong about Kobe Simmons. Brooksy, Dylan Brooks at 38. Nope. Small forward Chandler Parsons, $4,000 for him. I think that there is some upside in him. I wouldn't feel good about using him in cash. A last couple of games for him haven't been ideal, averaging just 27 per 36. At $4,000, he has had some hot shooting nights, shooting the ball much better this season. So I do think that you could consider him a GPP guy, but not a strong one. While TJ Warren had struggled a little bit, but still averaging 43 over his last three, the return of Booker should ease the defensive load on him somewhat. So at 6,900, I actually think that Warren is a decent play despite the fact that Booker's returning. I think that actually works as a positive for him. At power forward, Marquise Chris is at 3,500. Maybe he turned the corner in the last game. Probably not. If you're going to use him, it'd only be for tournaments, and I wouldn't be really getting too excited there. While Jarrell Martin had 20 points at 3,500 in the last one, with Jermichael out, Jarrell is marginally interesting. Maybe you could consider him as a cash guy, especially considering big men against the Suns can put up numbers, but I'm not feeling super, super strongly about that. While Alex Len, Len was playing well, 27 minutes a night, really crushing it, and now back to like weird 17, 18-minute roles behind Tyson Chandler. Don't understand it. Tournament, maybe. He has had a 50-point game in his last five, but of course that means that you have to get demoted and play fewer minutes. He is a GPP guy, and that is it. At center, Tyson Chandler, 44. Nah. Marc Gasol, 8,700. 47 points the last time these two teams met across the weekend. 40-point average the last three times. I think that Gasol is fine at 8,700. I'm not sure his upside is really through the roof, but I do think that he has a decent level of cash viability. And we expect Greg Monro to be a DMP CD because the rotation is gone and it's just all Chandler and Len until we get to a back-to-back. Utah and Denver. Mason Plumlee and Manny Moutier are both questionable for the Nuggets. Well, for the Jazz, it's just Hull Neto that is out along with Rudy Gobert. If Plumlee and Moutier are out, it's going to introduce some minutes, or especially Plumlee, it's going to have to introduce some minutes for Ken Fareed. It won't be enough for us to really care. He might start next to Nikola Jokic, or they might put Torrey Craig back in and shift Baby Neck Wilson Chandler up to power forward, and that's probably the way that I think they go. But if Plumlee is out, somebody has to play backup center. Unless they exhume Darrell Arthur, it'll have to be Fareed playing his 13 or 12 minutes behind Jokic. At point guard, Don Mitchell's at 7,300. Came back from that toe injury, dropped 40 in the last game in 37 minutes. It clearly didn't bother him. I would only be looking at him as a tournament type guy, though. Wouldn't feel strong about cash with him just given the price. And there is some fluctuations in his performances. The Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, 5,900, weirdly is playing fewer minutes with Manny Moutier out than what he was with Moutier in, which is obviously infuriating. 31-point average over his last three. He's at 5,900. I would only consider him a tournament guy, irrespective of Moutier's status. Ravishing Rick Rubio, with everyone healthy, his minutes are dropping. No thanks. Well, Manny Moutier, of course not. At shooting guard, Jingling Joe's at 4,900. The production hasn't really been there for Ingles. He's got no real tournament upside, and he was a safe cash guy, but that sort of dropped off, so he's probably not someone I'm all that keen on. While Farton Will Barton's at 5,800. His minutes have been fewer as well lately. Haven't quite been there, but if we have Plumlee out, I think we're going to have Baby Neck move up to the four, and that's going to open up some minutes for Farton. So if we have... If you see that Mason Plumlee is out, then I think Barton at 5,800 becomes a cash option as well as a tournament guy. Gaz Harris at 6,300.
Nice, Gary!
Numbers have been a little bit down with Jokic back, so he's probably a fade in this situation at that salary. Rocket Rodney Hood, 6,400, is only going to be a tournament guy. Torrey Craig, Joe Johnson, no interest. At small forward, Trey Lyles is small forward eligible in DraftKings. He's at 4,500. Consistent minutes, consistent production, absolutely fine with using him in cash. Whereas Babynek at 4,600, the same, and that's even boosted more, I believe, if Mason Plumlee is out. He has been pretty solid lately, averaging 28 over his last five games. Yurepko's been starting, but not doing a huge amount. At power forward, Mason Plumlee's at 44. Well, if Plumlee starts, I think there's maybe some upside there, but I'm not really feeling that as a great DFS play. Derek Favors at 59. I'd probably have to fade him as well. And then you've got the centers, which is Nikola Jokic, 7,900. No Gobert to contend with. Playing big minutes recently, averaging 41 points in 37 minutes over his last three games. I feel like this is a 40-point almost guarantee with clear 50 to 55 point upside. I really do like Jokic here. Remember, this is not the same Denver that has been an issue for centers. This is Derek Favors and not Rudy Gobert. So, and Favors is no slouch, but he's no Gobert. So I do like Jokic quite a bit here. All right, before we get you out of here, after this Christmas, we've got one game to go. It's the Sacramento Kings and the LA Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 5 and the total is 206.5 here. Vince Carter is questionable with rib pain. He'd been out of the rotation the last couple of games anyway. At point guard, it's Miloš Teodosic. He is at 4,600. The minutes have been good for him, 32 in the last one. The production hasn't. He is a tournament guy only at this point. Really hard to get him in cash with how he's been playing, but the minutes are encouraging. Whereas George Hill at 4,600, I feel much more comfortable about locking him in cash. His production has been much better as well. The minutes have been fine. He's averaging 29 over the last five. I think that's a pretty strong cash play. Lou Williams at 7,600, averaging 40 over his last three. Probably a little bit more up and down with Miloš getting 30 now. CJ Williams in the mix. Of course, Austin Rivers getting some playing time. Lou is more of a tournament guy, whereas Rivers at 66, just killing it. He is playing so well at the moment. 49 points in his last one. 46 average over the last three, putting up some good numbers. I think he is pretty much a cash lock at this point, given how much of the offense is actually going through him. Garrett Temple offers me nothing. Frank Mason, Juwan Evans, not much to see with either of those guys. There is no De'Aaron Fox, but that means, of course, that Frank Mason plays fewer minutes. At shooting guard, Budrick Hield, 4,700. He started the last game, played 32 minutes and scored 40 points. That means he's probably in line for a 17-minuter. That's the way his minutes have been going. But I do feel that he will stick in the starting lineup for at least one more game. And that makes him a pretty good GPP option here. Bogdan at 4,000. He moved to the bench for God knows what reason. I would much rather take Budrick Hield here, unless we hear that their roles are reversed and Bogdanovic is back starting. CJ Williams starting for the Clippers. Zero upside, not much reliability cash-wise either. At small forward, we've got Jamil Wilson at 37, starting at power forward, nothing for me to see there. While Slam and Sammy Decker at 3,600, Wes Johnson's out again, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything good for Decker given how Doc is handling those rotations. At power forward, I love Willie Cauley-Stein here at 5,500. He had 41 in his last game. This feels like, you know, at least 26 is almost locked in, which is pretty good value at 5,500. So I do like him as a cash option. Other power forwards, the table, Montrezl Harrell. Zebo at 6,000. Maybe a tournament play for Zebo. Not really feeling for cash. Could be 33 minutes, could be 24 minutes. Who knows exactly what they're going to do. It's always up in the air. And at center, it's DeAndre at 8,300. Love that for cash. That feels like a 40-point floor almost, or at least 39-point floor with 50-point upside. So I do really like DeAndre Jordan here at 8,300. Let's have a look at the Yahoo plays. For tournaments, it's Tyreek Evans that I like a lot, Malcolm Brogdon, Budrick Hield, Bam Adebayo, David Nwaba, Isaiah Cannon. Some GPP options and some guys that I like for both formats. Lance Stevenson, Bismack Biyombo's mainly a cash guy. Tone Tolliver, Babynek, Trey Lyles, the Duke Wayne Ellington, the Muppet John Henson, Willie Cauley-Stein, Austin Rivers, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, the Don Donovan Mitchell, DeMar DeRozan, DeAndre Jordan, and Nikola Jokic. On Moneyball for tournaments, we've got Yanni, we've got Tyreek, we've got Lou Williams, Budrick, Lauri Markkanen, Andrew Harrison, and for cash games, a look at Bismack, Tone Tolliver, Babynek, George Hill, JJ Barea, Trey Lyles, The Duke, Gaz Harris, Joshy Richardson, Willie Cauley-Stein, John Simmons, Alfred Payton, Austin Rivers, Eric Bledsoe, The Don, Kyle Lowry, DeAndre Drummond, and Nikola Jokic. And wrap it up with draft stars for tournaments. Yanni and Jokic, Lou Williams, The Don, Miloš, Budrick, Andy Harrison, Lance Stevenson, Bam Adebayo, Reggie Bullock, and Adrian Payne. And for cash, it's Bismack Biyombo, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Tone Tolliver, Trey Lyles, George Hill, Joe Ingles, Malcolm Brogdon, Will Cauley-Stein, The Duke, Gaz Harris, Rondé, Spencer Dinwiddie, Toby Harris, Miles Turner, Kyle Lowry, DeAndre Jordan, and Andre Drummond. We will get that issue with FanDuel fixed on Basketball Monster probably by the time you're listening to this, so that will be fixed by then. Don't forget, if you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, do me a solid and leave a 5-star review. You can also find this podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube, where you can subscribe and leave a thumbs up and leave a comment there. Hope you guys enjoyed your Christmas. Hope you guys, I don't know, you guys in the States get the 26th off as well. We get it off here. I don't know if you guys do. If not, enjoy going back to work. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Evan Turner.